This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
So after dropping points against Crystal Palace, there was the real danger that Manchester City could have gone into the game at Goodison Park 12 points off the top of the table. As it turns out, they've come away from Everton 5 points off leaders Liverpool and with a game in hand. Given the run of results before the Club World Cup, you have to say things could have been a lot worse. Better yet, City returned from Saudi Arabia as champions of the world, and then they put in a performance at Everton that could go down as a turning point. We'll find out whether it was a turning point over the next few weeks and months, but if it is, then it's come at exactly the right time. Stage one of finding out comes on Saturday when Sheffield United come to the Etihad. We'll preview that game a bit later on in today's Blue Moon podcast. And it's also our final show of 2023, so it's time to take a look at the alternative highlights of the year. That's coming up too. All of that on its way. I'm David Mooney, and today I am joined by City fan Chris Higginbottom.
Season's greetings.
Season's greetings indeed. Let's not go down that route for anyone who listened to last week's. And from statcity.co.uk, Adam Carter.
Hello.
Hello. It's Christmas, obviously, so before we get into the actual topics of the podcast, Higgy, any City-related tat in your Christmas stocking this year?
I wouldn't call it tat. I would call it a resplendent T-shirt with Burt House written on it.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Nice, I like that. Adam, any for you?
Did you know the card game Dobble?
No. What is Dobble?
It's where you have to match icons on a card to another card on the board, but it's only City icons. So in our house, only I will know which the icons are. So it's winning every time for me. So I'm happy with that.
So it's Snap, but with
pictures. I was just gonna say,
exactly.
A bit like Snap.
Yeah, but there's like 10 different icons on one card, and there's only one matching another card. But there's loads of mathematical formulas where it all links in. But yeah, yeah, I'm the only one who knows how to play it. Therefore, I'm the only one who can win it. But it'll be fun.
Trust you to have a maths-based card game.
That sounds like such fun.
Yeah. I mean, the other one I was going to ask, but I'll still ask it maybe. Higgy, any City-related New Year's resolutions?
I don't know. Is that a thing?
Maybe I don't know if it's a thing. Maybe it should be, I don't know. It's fine if you haven't got any. Adam, have you got any?
I'm just going to stop writing them off every time we concede a goal, because that's very often. But also, we've now got history to back us up. So that's my New Year's resolution, to stop crying as soon as we concede a goal.
Well, speaking of which...
No, segue.
Speaking of which, let's talk about the Everton game. You see what I did there? Very, very smooth, wasn't it?
Very nice.
Very seamless. Smooth. Yeah, tis the season for festive football, and the best way to watch it, down at your local Green King Sports Pub, of course. After all, Christmas is a time to catch up with friends, old and new, so get the team to your local for refreshing pints, delicious food, and live action of every Christmas cracker. Every fixture from TNT, Sky, and Amazon is live at Green King Sport. That means wall-to-wall action on the huge HD screens. Head to your local Green King and watch every winning goal, top bins volley, and dodgy VAR decision in an atmosphere worth sharing. Download the Green King Sports app and you'll receive 10% off drinks every single time there's sports on the TV too. So yeah, Everton is a good way to kind of end the week, I guess, Adam. But it's a week where that saw City become champions of the world as well, so we shouldn't overlook that. It's been quite a happy Christmas overall, hasn't it?
Yeah, considering the form we were going into that tournament in, I think it's kind of a bit of a turnaround and a bit more like the City of old, if you go back to last year or so, in the way we've controlled games, which obviously has been lacking before that. So, yeah, a nice present under the tree from Pep and the boys to bring that title home. Not the most important title externally, but I think internally it just gives you so much gravitas and so much belief that you can now call yourself the best in the world, and I think that will now springboard us. So I'm happy with that, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost odd, isn't it, Higgy? Because like a lot of people would say, yeah, but we know City are the best team in the world before this. And now it's actually been officially rubber stamped. Everyone from the outside is going, ah, it's a Mickey Mouse Cup, isn't it?
Well, it's always the way, isn't it? I mean, we've been saying we're the best team in the land and all the world for quite some time. So to have a big badge to prove it, slapped on our chest is quite something. I think it could be a little bit bigger and a bit golder, that badge, but it's not quite obtrusive enough, is it?
Yeah, actually, that's a thought. Yeah, it needs to dominate the kit more, doesn't it? When you think about it, yeah.
Just spray the players gold like
like post boxes.
Victim. Yeah.
Oh, we went totally different ways. I went for gold. I went for gold. Gold medal winners at the Olympics. You went for Bond girls. Very nice segue, though.
There you go. Don't know what to say about that, really. Yeah. But yeah, that sounds.
Christmas is a time for all Bond films. It's fine. Yeah.
I've not seen any. Maybe they've been consigned to the.
The woke.
Yeah, maybe they've been cancelled. But anyway.
What's your old... I mean, we should be doing the football, but I'm more interested
I'm
in
this. I'm desperately trying to talk about football. I know what's... banging on about everything but...
What's your old Bond film of choice out of interest? Is it Goldfinger?
Thunderball.
Oh, that's the most boring, mate. I'm sorry. I fell asleep in Thunderball.
No, I quite liked it. I think it's where Connor is at his most suave.
Yeah. Sorry, let's talk about the football. Yeah, yeah.
I have to agree. What's your favourite post box?
Gold ones. I can't think of any gold ones off the top of my head, but the one I use the most is at the end of my road, so I'd have to say that one.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Has yours got a little woolly hat on it at the moment?
Oh, it has, yeah. But yeah, it's a knitted snowman. We don't know who's put it there.
Yeah.
Who does it? Is it
Mystery.
WI or something? There's loads of these knitted little nativity scenes. And do they even get cold?
Yeah. So before we actually talk about the football, Adam, any favourite old Bond films or post boxes? Over to you.
I love the famous Manchester Arndale post box that stood the test of time and has survived everything that's thrown at it. So that's got to be my favourite pillar box.
Solid choice.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And Bond film? Bond fan?
GoldenEye, just because of the N64 game, really. Bit of a cop out that, but.
Yeah, I still see that as a modern film. Came out in the 90s. It's not. There we go.
Showing your age.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, football. Yes, let's talk about that. Higgy, they could have been 12 points off the top ahead of the Everton game. After the Everton game, it's 5 points off the top with a game in hand.
I can't believe it.
I know you can only look at that as an absolute result, can't you?
Well, the way we've been playing and the results we've been getting and the bloodied noses, or the actually we've got one nose. The amount of times our nose has been bloodied over the last this season, it's just absolutely remarkable that we're within touching distance if we win the game in hand, obviously. Because if we do win the game in hand, 2 points is nothing, as we know. The Saudi experience could have gone two ways. Could have been a nice break in the sun and a bit of a regroup. You know, cementing the bonds and having a nice time of it, playing games against not horrendously competitive teams like Everton, and come out of it with a trophy, and then you come back refreshed and revitalised. Or it could have been, we could have been a bit of a damp squib. We don't win it. We pick up some horrendous injuries, and luckily, very luckily, in Rodri's case, it's all worked out absolutely optimally, hasn't it? I can't believe that he came out of that tackle, and was jumping up and down with the trophy. I was like thinking, why is he jumping up and down? Why is he jumping up and down? I suppose there's no lateral movement. Maybe he's all right. I couldn't believe he played and was absolutely fine against Everton because he didn't train, did he?
So
my heart was in my mouth at that point, but it looks like it's done them the power of good. First half perhaps notwithstanding, although they didn't play badly, did they? It's just these daft errors.
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, that's it, isn't it? And Adam, you look at the performance at Everton. I mean, my gut instinct was, like, at half-time, they'd done very little wrong. They'd made, I was going to say one mistake, but it was one big mistake and a series of mistakes contained within that one big mistake, wasn't it? But they made one mistake and they went 1-0 down. And you're just kind of like, what can we do? They're playing perfectly fine, but then this happens.
Yeah, it was almost a case of here we go again. Like Higgy said there, you come back refreshed. You've got good results in Saudi Arabia. You've kept two clean sheets. Yes, the opposition was subpar, but you can only beat what's put in front of you, as the cliche goes. So then I thought, right, turning point. Tricky game at Everton, but we should have enough. And then we concede that goal. And my first thought was, here we go again. And I was really bizarrely gutted, more so than was probably justifiable when that goal went in. I just thought, after the Palace game.
Can I tell you, the exact phrase that I put in a WhatsApp group of City fans that I'm in is, what's the fucking point?
Because
you play really well and then that happens. Yep. You play badly and then that happens. What's the point in playing? Like, that's just going to happen.
Exactly. So before, just after the Palace game, I went on a seven-thread rant about how we were always up in games and then falling behind and throwing it away, playing well and then not getting the result we deserved. And it just looked like it was going to be a carbon copy of that again. And I was just like, to quote you, what's the fucking point? So what minute did we concede in? 20-odd, right? Yeah. And my reaction to conceding a 20-odd minute goal was unjustifiable when I look at it in the cold light of day today. And as I've matured, I've got a bit better at, and it coincides with City being amazing, that me dealing with results, because there's so few and far between when they go negative results, I've kind of got a bit better at dealing with it. And then last night, all of a sudden, I was throwing my toys out of the pram like a little kid. And I thought, this is weird, like the reaction. And obviously now I see it in the cold light of day, it was just one error, but it was the series of error, poor ball out to Bernardo on the wing. Then Rodri thinking that he had 10,000 hours on the ball in his own box, going back to his own goal, and then decided just to fall over and then invited them in for the tap-in. It was just a car crash, but a comedy of errors, and it just kind of all imploded at once. But when I look at it today, cold light of day, one error, other than that, perfect.
Yeah, I was going to say, other than all of that going on, Higgy, I mean, City fought back, they got themselves in front, and it felt like for the first time in forever, the end of the game was just a formality. They weren't hanging on, they weren't doing that thing where you're like, oh God, they're going to concede any second here. It was just, oh, they're 3-1 up, let's just see it out now.
Yeah, the main worry at that point was being subjected to the ritual brutality that Everton seemed to get away with.
It was for a while, wasn't there? Yeah.
I mean, there were times where, I forget who the, one of their forward, I can't remember his name, but there was an occasion where their forward fouled two of our guys in quick succession and got a free kick. So how has that happened? And then Grealish got booked after being continually targeted, and he got booked for he got kicked and fell over into someone.
I made a clean tackle while falling over. I don't.
Oh no, you headbutted him in the thigh. No, I've been tripped up, mate. And he got booked for that. It's just very strange. I mean, for the goal that we conceded, I must admit, I just took that as a death knell, and I was resigned to the loss, to be honest. But there's a bit of debate in one of the WhatsApp groups I was in about that pass to
Bernardo.
I mean, in a way, we do like to fire the ball about in confined spaces, and it's coming in from at least like 10 yards. But he did ping it a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, it wasn't a great pass out to him. But I think what makes it look worse as well is Bernardo slips. So when all of that is combined, I mean, it looks like it's knocked him over, but he just...
Well, that's it. How was your touch? Blam! And it's weird because I've basically spent the up until that point, I was, I don't like being negative, I was comfortably slagging off Akanji and Nunes, and then our best player does that. Rodri caught in about seven mines, and then just
great through ball, elegant, yes,
error. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But yeah, what way to fight back? It really did feel, as you alluded to earlier, like a turning point season wise, and you could see what it meant to them. I know there was a lot of. There will have been a lot of celebrating with the fans to soak up a bit of the aftermath of the Saudi tournament, because a lot of the fans won't have had a chance to see them. But they spent a long time over there with those away fans after that. And
it was
great to see. It meant a lot to them.
Yeah, it wasn't even at full time either. They spent a lot of time celebrating the equaliser, the goal that put them 2-1 up, the goal for 3-1. Like, all the celebrations, you could tell. Like, they know amongst themselves that things haven't been going well, and they've been doing the right things, and just things haven't been working out. So when it did work out, you could see they wanted to celebrate it, and I thought that was really good.
Those little side away ends, though, they do seem to lend themselves to more.
A good celebration.
Yeah, like Everton, Palace. Is it Palace?
Palace, yeah. Bournemouth as well.
Yeah. It's just like they just seem to be more accessible. And you just want to, as a player, they seem to just want to throw themselves in there more, which is always good to see.
Yeah, more of that. as Higgy says, Adam, we don't know if it's a turning point yet. We will find out over the coming weeks and months. I thought it was interesting that after the game, Foden said basically that Guardiola told him at halftime just to push through it, because like, what else can you do? You just got to keep playing well.
Yeah, it was a statement that last night. We just needed, like we've alluded to on this podcast today, we're saying like we were doing the right things, but then not getting the result for it. And I think the last night felt like the first time we did the right things and got the correct result. Even the commentators were saying you can't argue with the result in terms of possession, style of play, the way both teams have approached the game. We did deserve the win, and I think it's a massive statement. Bernardo was taking a corner in the first half and the ball just blew out of the quadrant, and I was like, oh, it's going to be one of those games. At Goodison Park, the wind's up, there's a storm brewing, you know, everything's stacked against you, and then you pull out one of the best performances of the season, certainly one of the most controlled towards the end of the game that you alluded to there. So I think it was a big statement, and we just kept going, kept plugging away. And I know the professional athletes, but when there's wind and other external elements against you as well, it doesn't matter how many charges or how much you get paid. The charges don't care how windy it is. So unless it's the length of the grass, of course. But
wind seemed to be on theirs as well. I don't know if you noticed that as well, annoying.
Yeah, that when they turn around after half time, the wind turned around as well, didn't it?
Yeah. We're going in Klopp territory there to the wind, bit. But I'm just setting the picture of, you know, what the conditions were. Everton, obviously, their backs are up with the whole corrupt Premier League campaign that they've got going on. So it was a bit of a cauldron atmosphere, and we stood up 1-0 down, turned it around, and then won out comfortably. So I think that can symbolise a semblance of a turnaround. Yeah. But I don't know how many games we need to win to be able to call it a turnaround, but it's certainly the start of one. Must be.
Do you know how bad the storm was yesterday? I drove home through it from my partner's parents, which is in Wallasey, so Merseyside. And driving back down the M53, we were crawling at about 30 miles an hour because nobody could see anything. And then when we got home, I had to sellotape the letterbox down because it just wouldn't shut up banging in the wind. There we go. That's how bad the storm got.
I think that feature on the Beaufort scale? Letterbox,
yeah. Adam, the other thing you said there about what the celebrations mean and how the players have reacted to it, it did feel it feels like a now or never performance. And what I mean by that is, like the other teams this season, while City have been away at the Club World Cup and the situation that they got themselves in ahead of it, the other teams have not punished them. Basically, they're within touching distance of the top, and so if you're not going to punish them in this stage, for City now they come back from it and they have to go. You know, if we're not going to get it done now, then we're never going to get it done this season.
Yeah, there's definitely an air of that, and at 1-0 down last night, that was kind of it's do or die now, and I think they were dying, but then they chose to, and that's always a good choice, I find.
Yeah,
do over dying every time.
I think I'd rather do that. Yeah, yeah. it's the better of the two options.
The choices?
It's do or die, mate. What are you going for?
Oh, yeah.
All right, then I'll do it. Fine. Yeah. God, if I have to.
Yeah. So they're almost forced into it, really, I suppose.
Yeah. Higgy, let's talk about Phil Foden because he put in quite an impressive display against Everton. It was a wonderful hit for the goal. He hit the post late on. He's creating chances aplenty. It's the sort of performance that it shows a maturity that maybe hasn't been there in the last few weeks. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. There's a real kind of steely determination to his performance, as well as the obvious flair and flamboyance that he brings with just the nature of his play. He was everywhere and they couldn't get near him, really. And that shot at the post, I saw the post-match interview, and he himself said that. He was like, oh, my God, I hit it so well. But yeah, even without that going in, it was just a magnificent performance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The way he celebrated the goal as well, it wasn't like nothing over the top. It was just like, yes, that is what I'm capable of doing. Let's just crack on. And I think, you know, people can argue this way and that way about whether he should be played more centrally, but him playing like that, that's the only argument you need, really. It's not going to be always going to be an easy process or a smooth transition, or, you know, you can't just put him in now and expect him to it to be brilliant every week. He gave the ball away against Palace and you think, oh, that's why you can't play in centrally, because he made an error and a goal came from it. We seem to be getting weird goals against us, and to hold stuff like that against Phil and deny him his natural, what would seem to be his natural role, would be folly, I think. And he really cemented that kind of argument last night in terms of where he should be and where he performs best.
It's funny you mentioned, I mean, you talked about the celebrations, Higgy. Did you see Guardiola afterwards basically go up to the fans with Foden and he kept pointing at him and was like, you guys need to appreciate what this guy's been doing.
It was like a very strange ventriloquist act. We just had hold of him.
Yeah, no hands inside the dummy, but still somehow the dummy was talking. That's a horror movie, isn't it?
Well, I mean, he was absolutely insane last night, Pep. He does this thing, doesn't he, where he'll go up to someone and he'll say something and they're like, they look almost slightly nervous because it's like, oh, he's on one again, we've won. Yeah. And then he says something to them and it's like he waits for them to react, and when they're just about to say something, he grabs them in a headlock and gives them whiplash and then donkey rubs and then like throws them towards the fans, and it's just absolutely mental, but I love him.
Adam, for you, when you watch a Foden performance like that, obviously, like Higgy referenced the Palace thing, and you know, I've been critical of Foden not having the defensive work in the centre. He did again against Everton. He gave the ball away a few times in those areas. But at the same time, you look at what the rest of his performance brings. It really is a balancing act about what you want, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think when Stones went off, I was looking around the pitch for leaders and someone to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And I feel when things haven't been going our way recently, we've not had someone to grab the game and literally say, right, I'm dictating this, I'm deciding the way this game's going to go. And for Phil to be that person last night, because I think he was quite quiet in the first half, but that might just be comparing him to his second half performance, which was out of this world.
He had that little right foot effort, didn't he, where he nipped in?
Oh, yeah.
And then, I said, oh, absent in the first half, but ran the show in the second, and some people disagreed with that online, which is absolutely fine. But I think I was just comparing it to his second half performance. And just to see someone grab the game by the scruff of the neck, to be that young, to be homegrown, to be one of our own, to be as geeky and cliche as you can with that saying, I just think it was perfect that it was him. And I feel like it was an easy jibe to throw out after the Palace game, saying, oh, that's why you're not playing central. I was guilty of it myself in the throes of the annoyance of the full-time whistle. And then he goes and proves that actually I know nothing and he knows best. And if he wants to dictate the game, he's going to do it. And long may that continue, because I think he's the right man in De Bruyne's absence to do that kind of role in the middle, rather than we've tried and persevered with Alvarez. That's just not his role. And I'd like to see Foden doing that now until De Bruyne's up and running. And then let's just have two of them and go all out attack.
Let's clean up another few bits from the Everton game. I'm surprised that it's had as much traction as it has this, Higgy, but I don't see how there can be any controversy over the penalty, because, I mean, he saved it, didn't he? It was the best save from Onana this season.
I mean, nice. You've been waiting for that one, haven't you?
Yeah. I wrote that last night and I've not stopped thinking about it since.
I mean, the thing is, what's up for debate there for me is the rule rather than whether it was a penalty or not. Under the current laws, that's a penalty. Like, debate till the cows come home whether that should be a penalty, whether the laws should dictate that that's a penalty. The way the game is at the moment, that's a penalty. I mean, I suppose Michael Owen was saying about it's not even that far out from his body. It's like it's
above his head.
I think, you know...
controversial. Michael Owen said something.
Yeah, but that's a man who doesn't like movies. So, how do you value his opinion? It doesn't hold any sort of credence. If you say I don't like movies, I still get it.
He thinks throwing an apple into a bin is an act of daring that showcases his striker's instinct.
Yeah, it's a man who's clearly never seen a Bond film, so he wouldn't have enjoyed the start of the podcast. So he's not still listening to this, in terms of what actually is handball there, though, Higgy, I actually disagree with you. I think that's always been a penalty.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, the point I was trying to make is that it's not very controversial.
Yeah, ultimately, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, maybe, I suppose, you could say he's not able to get his arm out of the way under old or new rulings. But, you know, just when you're trying to block the ball, don't have your arm in the air.
Yeah, it's always been the case for me. Adam, afterwards, Sean Dyche was, his line was that it's not, how could that possibly be deliberate? And I think I think we as football fans and football people in general have started to misuse the word deliberate in this situation, where you are deliberately putting your arm in a place where it could get hit by the ball. That is the deliberateness of the action.
Exactly. It's avoidable, isn't it?
It's avoidable. It's not this. People use deliberate as in, oh well, he's seen the ball and he's wanted to hit it with his hand. That's like. No handball is that situation. Deliberate for me is putting your hand in a position where it could cause a problem for you.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. The controversy is the rule, not the application of the rule last night. And it's not all of a sudden become the... It wasn't like that's the new handball rule yesterday. Like, I don't understand the controversy of it, maybe because we were the beneficiaries of it. But I'd like to think if it was the other end, I could see why it was given, even though I don't like the rule. There's been plenty of those this season as well, but I don't. It dictated too much of the airtime last night and didn't cover the other things about how City to tweak things to change the game and things like that, which was annoying. I think it was very. It was just simple punditry thereafter because they had a semi-controversial point that they just wanted to latch onto to create some kind of dramatic narrative, and I'm just like, I'd rather we were talking about letterboxes and postboxes, to be honest.
Yeah. What's the difference between a letterbox and a postbox?
Are they
just the same thing?
No. Your letterbox is on your door.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Sorry, that was a stupid question for me.
Honestly.
You need to untape yours now anyway, because you won't be getting any mail.
I let the postman do that. That's fine.
Postman won't do that. He'll think he doesn't want any mail. Not my job, mate.
Maybe I don't want any mail. Maybe I've had enough mail.
I'll just scatter some rubber bands outside your house and expect you to pick them up. Why do they do that?
Not his job.
It's literally his job. Like, it's caused him to be there.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Iggy, the Stones injury didn't look good. He left Goodison in a boot, a protective boot.
the back of someone's car.
Yeah, maybe.
Like Reservoir Dogs.
That's why it didn't look good.
He's now in a field.
The assistant couldn't flag because of the protocol. He got injured. It's one of is it more than one of them things, or is it just like another annoyance? Because it's again Stones this season. When you've been waiting for him to come back, he's been injured again.
Cristal. There's a Mancini line on it.
Was it? I don't remember.
Can't remember who he said it about. Was it Richards? Made out of crystal, made out of glass. Like,
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. I watched that a few times, like the incident, and I couldn't for the life of me work out how he'd done it. And at first, I couldn't work out exactly where he'd hurt. I mean, I know he sort of went towards his ankle, but I thought maybe he's twisted his knee. Because, you know, he was going one way and he's managed to spin round in the tackle and clear the ball the other way. Great tackle.
Yeah, it was.
Completely unnecessary given that the player was offside, but I mean, that's a separate argument. But like, I just don't know how that has managed to constitute a serious injury. Like, I love John Stones, he's a brilliant footballer, but he's so injured. Like, how do we stop this?
Yeah, it's just frustrating, isn't it? I mean, then after all of that, Adam, I was ready to write everything off at that point. Half-time, 1-0 down, Stones off injured. Akanji stepping into midfield. I saw he came in for a lot of flack online, but I thought he played really well. And I'm wondering if I'm wrong here. I thought Akanji was good. Higgy, do you disagree, given the noise that you just made?
Higgy, you probably feel more strongly about this, so I'll let you go.
Well, I will do if that's all right. I mean, every time he made a mistake, I wrote it down, and he must have made about six really stupid errors. Not just like, you know, you try to make a pass and it just goes wrong, and it goes to the door. Just stupid stuff where you're barging into someone knowing that it's going to be a foul light, and what part of you doesn't understand that if you carry on doing that, you're going to foul them and it's going to turn the ball over to them. It's going to be dangerous. He just keeps making daft decisions. It's really helped us when Nunes went off. Nunes as well, like, oh my God, so frustrating. I can't get past this feeling that he's not of the required level and he's a bit of a coward. I just can't shake it. I watch him wanting him to dissuade me of that opinion, and he's not done it yet at all. I think he did one good thing last night in the box, and it was like, oh, well, that was quite handy. And the rest of the time, every time he gets the ball, and I know he's not, you know, you don't expect everyone to do something amazing every time they get the ball, but it's always the easy way out. It's always something, you know, not, it's like the negative, the most negative positive he can contribute is the option that he seems to go with. Maybe I'm being harsh on him. He's not been here long, but I just don't like him at the moment.
I think he needed to hit. He had two shots in the box, Nunes, and I think he needed to hit them both with a little bit more conviction, and I think you'd have seen a different side of him if you had.
I know, I'm probably being harsh, aren't I? I'm just being... I've succumbed to this modern generation trait of I want everything now. Everything has to be brilliant now, but... yeah, just be a bit more brilliant soon.
Yeah. Adam Akanji for you. I thought he did well, but I'm willing to be told I'm wrong.
I definitely noticed the barging into people unnecessarily. He sees that as stopping the game and he knows what he's doing, but I just think it's ridiculous and puts us under a bit of pressure. I thought it was better in the second half than the first half, but I think everyone was. So I don't know whether that was an Akanji specific. And I know Sam Lee mentions it a lot on the Let Me Talk podcast around. The City fans have this air of expectability that Akanji's going to be the one to make the mistake, even if he doesn't. So I think he's going to be guilty by association of being the cheapest defender, therefore the lesser defender. And actually, last night was probably one of his worst performances, but he does deserve a bit of credit for being the mainstay of the defence. But I know he's got an itinerary of issues there, so I've not got the facts and figures to back my assumption up there. But
what are people saying that his low price tag is colouring people's opinion of his performances?
Yeah, but if it's not obvious, if it's not a clear and obvious error,
sort of scene of the crime. Because
exactly that. Because Akanji's in the lineup, therefore it's a lesser lineup because he did cost us £100 million. Is what I'm getting at there.
Maybe. Yeah. I just think he should make less mistakes, and people just think he's making less mistakes.
I know that, but I think there's an air of, if we've got Akanji in the lineup, we're a weaker defensive unit, and there's not actually that many stats to back that up. But last night, with your eyes, you can see that the first half performance from him wasn't great. But I think he when he goes into that midfield pocket, he's doing a better job than people think.
Possibly. I don't have an agenda against him personally. I can't speak for everyone else who's slagging him off, but... when he first came to the club, I thought he was slow on the turn. I thought he was, lacked incisiveness. And he absolutely, you know, I was more than happy to admit that he completely turned my opinion around. He didn't put a foot wrong for the rest of the season after maybe an inauspicious start. And I was happily wrong and, you know, happy to extol his virtues as a fine player. And then... I don't know, this season he's just looked a bit crap for me.
Well, if you're still listening, Manuel, I thought your performance was good.
You're all allowed to not play brilliantly all the time.
That is true.
It expects a lot.
This is our final show of 2023, so it's time to look back over the alternative highlights. Kieran Murray curated a lot of this list, but sadly he was ill on the day that it came to recording it. So Don Farrell stepped in to join me and KC to talk through the lot, starting with Grealish at the treble celebrations.
He's just unbelievable crack, isn't he? He's just like just a top bloke. It's like Gundogan was interviewed like in the mix zone or something. About the fact that he had to go out, that they were on the piss basically for 2 days. Obviously, he doesn't drink. And he just said, about Grealish, he just said, he just carries us all on his back and away we go.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff from the parade. I mean, first off, he goes there on the tram in a high-vis jacket with nothing else on. Then there's the arms out photo in the on the back of the bus. There was the speech he gave where he said, "There's only one person in this team I absolutely adore, and he looks homeless, and that's Bernardo Silva." It's just like thing after thing.
Yeah, I mean, so like, it was quite good actually being at the parade because I like saw the start of that, like in the mix zone in Istanbul. Because sometimes after teams like win trophies, they all try and like pile out together to avoid doing interviews. I mean, not that many City players didn't use that night because they were all off on the way out, but there was a few of some milling round, and you heard like this, tune started banging, and it was Everywhere by Fleetwood Mac, naturally. And I thought, oh, that's they're all coming through singing, but it was just Grealish with, I think it was the kit man Brandon, you know, sort of ghetto blaster on his shoulder, like banging that out. Editing himself so he didn't sing the drugs bit of the song, but like just piling through there, like sort of like the Larry Pied Piper. And this is like about, you know, 2 hours after foot, 2 or 3 hours of full time. So he can't have been drunk at that point, but it felt like he's going to go very big here, isn't he? And yeah, the absolute garbled nonsense when he got on the stage and like, I think it's Natalie Pike's trying to get the microphone off him. And he's like, no. The turkey needs feeding. I noticed on that Bernardo clip, the pigeon needed feeding at that point. So he was like working his way through livestock or something. And they've all had too much vodka. I do think this section of your podcast every year is basically just becoming the Jack Grealish bit. He's good fun, isn't he?
He is. I mean, the best of it is, though, Casey, is it's not even Grealish. I think the best of the treble celebration isn't even Grealish's thing. He's the victim of this, where they got Ruben Dias to do shots for the first time ever, and he took two shots and was sick in Grealish's mum's handbag.
Yeah, you talk about settling into English culture, just absolutely spot on, really, won't it? he's too prim and proper, isn't he? He has to be getting on it, really, like the rest of them. So yeah, I can imagine. Like, so when that story came out, it was a major shock because he'd be the last person you'd expect to be like that, really, wouldn't he?
Yeah, had to go and buy Grealish's mum a new handbag. Have you ever been sick somewhere that's embarrassing, Casey? You must have been, surely.
Where should I start, really? loads and loads of different places.
Yeah. Dom, the handbag story obviously comes off the back of the dressing room thing of Watch Me Gucci bag as well from Grealish. I think, was that FA Cup final?
He was probably still annoyed about the handball, to be fair.
Yeah, not surprised. But of all the fashion things, it has to be Grealish. Have you seen his, did you see his dinner table for Christmas this year?
I haven't. The only one of him I saw was like a fairly normal picture of him and his other half doing Merry Christmas. So I've not seen the fixtures and fittings at Shay Jack, as it were.
Now, he looks like he's living in like a furniture magazine. It's just like it's the most upmarket thing you could possibly imagine.
What kind of furniture magazine are we talking? We're talking like IKEA.
We're talking high ender. Like I mean, what was it? Oak Furniture Land? Is that high end? I don't know.
It can't be high end because we've got some Oak Furniture Land stuff in our house.
All right, fine. That
is this carrying on his Home Alone thing that he's now like got the McAllister's house? I know he did like the Home Alone 2 tour in New York. He's like, maybe that's what he's going for.
Maybe
like, that's high end, isn't it? Because like Kevin's daddy must be an arms dealer, mustn't he, or something? Because where does all that money come from?
Yeah, anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a disgrace, that house. Like I thought all Americans lived in those houses when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's exactly that. I want to finish with, of course, I want to finish with, because why wouldn't I? The images from the treble celebrations. I mean, purely, I'm not going to lie, KC, it's just thirst. Dias, Grealish, and Haaland shirtless in the rain.
Oh yeah, I can't blame you. To be fair, you know, they turned me nearly, you know what I mean?
I was so annoyed, you know. I went because we went to the parade I'd been working and I rushed over to get there. It was absolutely lashing it down, and I stood, you know, the bit of the Arndale where outside Boots, basically, where the where you can stand under cover, and it was the corner of the bus tour, and I was like, I'll just stand here and kind of watch the buses from here where I stay dry, and everyone else was just enjoying getting piss wet through. And if I'd have just run round the corner and got pissed wet through, I'd have watched Diaz lift the trophy up, the thing where they kind of lift it and lift it and lift it and the crowd cheers. I'd have got to enjoy him doing that, like just like barely wearing anything, trophy above his head hanging off the back of the bus. And it might have killed me. It might genuinely have killed me.
I feel like you were slipping into a bit of fan fiction there for a second.
I nearly did.
Have you seen that woman who I've not seen it for a while, who writes like De Bruyne and Grealish fan fiction on Twitter? I got a reply off her once when I'd done like written a Jack Grealish piece. It was like, it was a pretty left field interaction. But now with Diaz, he was topless, but he was wearing all three of his medals, wasn't he? Does, as much as the vomiting in Jack Grealish's mum's handbag is very out of character, wearing nothing but his three medals on his torso seems like incredibly on brand Ruben Diaz. Wasn't the one last year when he had his underpants modelling gig and Grealish replied to his Instagram with "fuck off, Ruben"?
Yeah,
the three medals is pretty fuck off, Ruben.
Having said that though, I don't think anyone will top David Silva in his underpants from a few years ago. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Good heavens, yeah.
Well, while we're being weird, let's turn our attentions to some things the manager.
When are we ever not being weird?
Well, true, yeah. But let's turn our attentions to some things that the manager's done in the last few months. And Dom, let's start at Turf Moor on the opening day of the season. Because that whole business of just telling Haaland off on the pitch at half time got a lot of attention. And I was like, have you not been paying attention to Guardiola? This is what he does every single game.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, including some mates of mine and some guy I used to work with, are pretty big on, it's so performative, it's ridiculous, he needs to turn it in. And I do get that, but I think the more and more you watch him, it is like he's just a bit mad. I mean, there was the famous one at Bayern he did with like Joshua Kimmich, where he had like a big team talk with him on the pitch. he's a strange fella, isn't he?
When you're at the, it does seem more like a compulsion than him performing, doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah. I mean, there's the performative stuff, Casey, I guess, would be telling the fan to come on and do the job when he wouldn't make.
Yeah, that's a bit of crack. Yeah,
yeah.
And you know, like obviously he plays up to it in press conferences and stuff like that. But like, say for example, like who was the Southampton player? Was it
Nathan Redmond?
Yeah, Nathan Redmond. Like that's not performative. That's just absolutely he's crackers. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's a bit of column A, bit of column B.
Yeah. We talked about you being sick before, Casey. Have you had a parking ticket when you fancy telling the traffic warden off?
No, because I barely ever drive, do I? I've got far more luminous sick stories than parking issues.
Right. So what did you feel about Guardiola getting a parking ticket, getting angry about it, and then telling then when the traffic warden asked for a selfie, saying, no, you've got to pay if you want a picture?
fair play to him. Like, it's quick thinking, isn't it? But if you're absolutely wadded, you can park wherever you want, can't you? Because it's like, you know, parking fines, just nothing to... multi-millionaires, isn't it?
So yeah, it's the multi-millionaire version of pay and display, isn't it?
My initial reaction, and this is a right like miserable thing to think, I was just like, we should have the model that they have in Finland, where it the fine is based on a percentage of your wages, right, like a percentage of your earnings rather than like a set flat fee. So that's how boring I am.
Yeah, was it Balotelli, Dom, that was just leaving cars all over Manchester because he could afford to?
It wasn't all over Manchester, was it? This is the funny thing about the Balotelli one. Wasn't it like the same spot on King Street outside San Carlos?
It could have been.
Because it was like sort of Christmas every day for traffic ones, and it's all Balotelli. Because it's where he used to go and eat all the time. And it'd just been his car on the double yellow. So it was like, it was effectively his parking space. But yeah, like you say, it's multi-millionaire paying display. But yeah, he like racked up dozens and dozens of them, didn't he?
Yeah. Sticking with Guardiola, Dom, you've been in a fair few press conferences, throughout the year anyway, but in the start of this season, there's a list I've got of things he's done in press conferences that I just want to rattle through. So taking back the idea that Mateus Nunes is the best in the world, He said, good food needs time to cook, put it in the microwave. It's not the same. That was about fixture congestion. He called Hwang the Korean guy, and then Hwang went and scored the winner for Wolves. Fred Caldera asking him about who should win the Ballon d'Or, Messi or Haaland, and then him laughing and saying, ha ha ha, you're so funny. There's that. It just like week after week at some point.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Pep and Fred have got like a nice little catalogue of these daft things. Like, when Fred first grew his moustache, I don't know if this was during COVID when we were doing them on Zoom. Pep said Fred's moustache looked sexy. And there was also, I think you probably would have heard this as well, like when Fred had gone on to watch Fluminense win the Libertadores, he came back into the City press when he'd lost his voice. He'd sort of been out on the Raz. And yeah, Pep was pretty amused by that as well.
Yeah.
I do think in general with Guardiola presses this year, like going back to, because Happy Flowers was January, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then there was the 115 charges, and I was at the one where he went is when he's name checking Paul Dickoff and Julius Caesar and all sorts going on that day. I think it's been his best press conference. He's pretty much been on one all year. I was been racking my brains after the Hwang one, the Korean guy. I can't remember who this was now, but I'm convinced a couple of weeks later he was rattling off some plays from an opposition team, and he got to a guy with a fairly complicated name, and he was all over the place with who this guy was, but he just stuck with it and basically thought, I'm not going to say like the Spanish guy or the Italian guy. I'm just going to say some gibberish for this person's name and style it out. It reminded me of that brilliant clip of Eden Hazard when he's playing for Chelsea and he refers to Shrewsbury as Strawberry. It's so good because he knows he's halfway through his answer and he's thinking, I can't remember what they're called, but they sound a bit like Strawberry. And he goes, and yes, we have the game against Strawberry, yes. And he just like the yes to the interviewer as if to go, don't pull me up on this, mate. I know they're not called Strawberry, but I don't know what they're called.
Yeah. KC, sticking with the on the pitch stuff, did you see his reaction to Edison's Cruyff turn against Red Star?
Yeah, he's just I was watching that and I was just thinking, but at that point in time as well, just enjoy it. Like we were already easily through. Do you know what I mean? It's like, do you remember when Edison did that the one on the line against, was it Liverpool a couple of years ago? And the only person who was calm in the whole stadium was Edison. Like everyone else was having an absolute shit fit.
Yeah. Speaking of Edison, staying calm though, KC, he did nearly kill Sergio Gomez at the trophy parade.
Well, I missed that. What happened?
He set off a confetti cannon over his shoulder.
Oh, fucking hell.
Did you see that, Dan?
I did. And it was actually, I thought it was an improvement that he sort of nearly killed a member of the dressing room and staff, because a couple of years ago, on one of the parades, I think it might have been the year before this one. Again, what parade, what cup final? but going down Deansgate, he was, he had like a bottle of champagne and there was a lad sat on some traffic lights and Edison just nearly cleaned the fella off the top of the traffic lights. So that probably would have been worse than killing Sergio Gomez, doing it to a member of the public.
I saw an interview with Jack Grealish recently and he just said he's just constantly mental. He said like apparently like when they walk through anywhere with a doorway, he just kicks his foot up so that he kicks like the lintel. He's like, what are you doing, you nutter?
It's the lintel, the bit above the door.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like what he's doing, does it not like support the weight of the wall above the door? Is he trying to bring the building down?
No, I have no idea. Like, yeah, it was just a short clip of Grealish saying that he does that all the time. He just boots the like the door frame basically, like the top of it as he's walking past. Like, but like how bloody
flexible is
flexible?
He?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't dream of doing anything like that. I could barely get out of bed in the morning without my back getting stiff. God. Goodness me.
Tell me about it.
Let's final one on Pep, Dom. When the goal that Grealish scored at Luton, after City had that string of draws and they were desperate for some sort of victory, they take the lead at Luton, and the Luton fans are up in arms because they want a handball, and Grealish asks Alvarez in the celebrations, did it hit his hand? But Guardiola knew all along because he was pointing to his chin at the Luton fans.
Yeah, at this time of year, can you imagine Guardiola doing charades? It'd be so intense, wouldn't it? Like. Like you start, because the thing is, it does look like he's, and this is great for audio, obviously. It looks like the way he like hits his chin. It looks like the thing people used to do at school, you know, where you put like your tongue in your bottom lip and go, It looked like he was doing that to the Luton bench at first.
Well, you see, the thing is, he'd already been wound up by that awful decision for the Bernardo foul throw before that, hadn't he?
Yeah.
So he was already like highly strung.
So he's explaining the rules to everyone at every point in an animated manner. Yeah.
The laws, Dom. The laws, not the rules.
Of course, yeah. I've got in trouble with that talking about cricket this year as well, with laws and rules and the spirit of the game. Get out.
Yeah. A couple of Grealish ones on the pitch from recently, Dom. The Club World Cup, I don't know how much of the Club World Cup you covered in the end, but there was I think these are both from the Fluminense game, when the referee was demanding that the ball was in the corner quadrant, and he bent down to touch it twice to kind of pretend that he put it back in. And then the referee asked him again for a third time, and he said, "It's already in there, you fucking idiot."
The thing about that was, he said it so clear. Like, I watched that game in the pub, and he said that so clearly. You know, like sometimes you can't hear commentary in a pub, like, you know, where there's a load going on. You could hear that clear as day.
Yeah, because the commentator then goes, "Well, apologies if you heard any bad language there."
Yeah.
Good one of them. And then the other one, Dom, was that he denies Ole in the Fluminense players causing that ruck at the end.
Yeah, I like him denying that he said Ole specifically, but not denying that. So he was probably going, "Way!" or something. all good behaviour in there. Because the last 20 minutes of that did get very Copa Libertadores, didn't it? Like, there was the tackle on Rodri, and there was a few tasty challenges went in, but obviously... Grealish was very much in his sweet spot there. He's sort of his Stefan Savic sort of heat of just rustling everyone. So yeah, lovely stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of rustling everyone, you sometimes have to kind of get the team round and get them kind of all on the same page. John Stones making election posters in his bid for captain, KC. But I think the best bit of this is that he then didn't get nominated as captain.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. When he didn't get nominated, but surely he knew he wasn't going to be picked if he's taking the piss in that way. Or was he being serious? That's the bit of that I didn't get. Yeah, I'm assuming he must have been taking the piss.
I don't know. Man of the people. Dom, you're man of the people for John Stones?
Yeah, I'm all for it. I just hope that Ruben Dias never wins the election, because he strikes me as the kind of guy that would win a Democratic election and then do away with elections.
He's definitely a dictator in waiting, isn't he?
Big time.
Speaking of John Stones, have you seen the clip of Calvin Phillips burning him with a teaspoon on one of the away trips?
Did make me wonder whether Phillips did that to Pep's head like last year. that's why we are where we are. It's just a bizarre thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, Dom, are you a proud Yorkshire teaman?
Well, I mean, I have lived on the other side of the hills for many years now, and it is probably my only concession to brand Yorkshire is the tea is pretty good, to be fair. All the other Yorkshire Day stuff, I mean, spare me. It's ridiculous.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
There's been plenty of odd stuff happen away from Guardiola because Kyle Walker says that Bernardo has such a good relationship with Guardiola that they get him to ask Pep for days off. You have that sort of relationship with your bosses at work, KC? You're the one that they can ask for days off?
Actually, probably, because I'm just the biggest gobshite that will just say whatever, really.
Yeah, so the team comes to you and goes, we get us some time off.
But I wouldn't. This is the thing as well. Like, because you've made me think now. Because I initially thought when Walker said that, I thought, well, Bernardo is like teacher's pet. But like, I'm now thinking maybe he isn't. Maybe he's just king gobshite like myself and just will just say whatever.
No, Bernardo's definitely teacher's pet vibes, isn't he, Dom?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's interesting to get into after days off, because he's clearly better asking for days off than he is for asking for a transfer. He's been trying to do that for about 3 years, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's been so successful at trying to ask for a transfer, he signed a new contract.
Yeah, he gets some days off, though, he'd lose, so
everything's fine. That'll be in the terms, won't it?
Did you see the Drake thing, Dom? People thought De Bruyne had a writing credit on a Drake song, but it turned out it was just some other K. De Bruyne.
So you say people thought. So I saw the K De Bruyne thing and De Bruyne's quip about it. And I just thought, because the way, basically, Drake is pretty much 70% of footballers' favourite artist, isn't he? And they all move in the same circles. Well, I just thought it was true.
Drake's a right creepy bastard, isn't he? He creeps on them all, doesn't he? Like, he just seems like a right gimp.
I mean, at least he's got some discernible talent on, like, that I Show Speed character.
I thought you were going to say me.
But yeah, you said people thought, until I opened your show notes for this about half an hour ago, I thought Kevin De Bruyne had co-written Drake's song. So yeah, call me gullible. And I'm a bit disappointed. I'm going to go and check out some Cohen De Bruyne jazz, though. What yeah. done here? That's wasting the new year.
Casey, the one of our mates, Macca, went fairly viral with the phrase, it was Buzz Aldrin. Every fucker remembers it was Buzz Aldrin because that whole nobody remembers the second man on the moon stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, I love Macca to bits, but he loves a bit of low-hanging fruit, doesn't he, for taking the piss out of people. I'll wind him up about that next time I'm having a pint with him.
Have you seen that that it's reared its head again after United came from 2-0 down to beat Villa?
I saw that, yeah.
They started it again last night?
Well, after the Boxing Day games, when United came back to beat Villa 3-2 at home, a lot of City fans were posting the 3-2 final day Villa with Buzz Aldrin was the second man on the moon.
Oh, Jesus. State of it. You spoke to someone who's been on the moon, haven't you?
Yes. In my other job, I was trying to get a fellow called Charlie Duke onto Five Live years ago to tell us what it was like walking on the moon. I didn't try and get him on the podcast, though. I did think that would be a little bit too far.
What number man on the moon was he?
What number on the moon? Oh, that's a great question. Let's find out live.
Everyone knows, obviously, like, you've got Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, then you got Michael Collins, who was left on the
support ship.
But then, pretty much after that, I think no one remembers any of the rest of them, do they? So, if you know Port Vale win a treble in about 100 years, then no one will remember theirs.
The other ones people remember are the Apollo 13 lads, and they never landed.
Yeah, that's true. What you're saying is that if people want to remember Port Vale's treble, they've all got to die.
The team didn't die. They made it back.
Did they make it back?
Yeah, they made it back. You're thinking of Challenger.
Right? Oh, Challenger. Yeah, no, Challenger was the one that blew up, wasn't it? Yeah. God, this has gone dark. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, Apollo 13 was Tom Hanks, Kevin Bacon, and obviously there were real astronauts' names whose names I've forgotten.
Yeah, who says doing podcasts isn't rocket science?
There we are.
Very well done. Charlie Duke, by the way, the 10th person to walk on the moon. He was the youngest person ever to do it, though. There you go.
And people do remember the 10th person on the moon. So, I mean, the stick is rubbish on several levels, isn't it?
Dom, did you see the other viral tweet that somebody found that there was some Austrian Sunday League team that had just ripped off City's old badge?
So good. They've gone the parrot, but with two heads.
I know. Incredible.
Absolutely love that. Like, I know, like, the parrot has got pretty sort of, iconic status now, particularly with, like, City fans of around, like, our vintage. Great to see it living on with an extra head, which is odd.
There's so many great, like, I've got, like my own personal parrot. So at my sister's wedding, as a present to me, for doing speech and everything, they got me a hip flask with the parrot on and my name on it.
Excellent. Excellent. It lives on in so many ways. Let's talk quickly about some celebrations because, Dom, I'll come to you on Terry Flanagan shortly, jumping on Haaland at Sheffield United. But, Casey, I've never felt so old as seeing Doku and the Gritty, because no idea what that was. There was the video City put out of everybody knee sliding at Old Trafford. So Haaland did it, Lauren Hemp did it, Phil Foden did it, and then Bunny Shaw did it. And then the fact that all of us fans, after last season, just got everywhere by Fleetwood Mac in our Spotify Wrapped.
Oh, good. Yeah, well, who didn't love Fleetwood Mac before it anyway? But, like, it's just unreal how well that's caught on.
Yeah.
My only point of contention, though, is that, like, you see, the OI bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's...
I always go, Sunji, hi. Because, like, it's not as good as Higgy singing, he's going to go past you, he's Jeremy Doku, is it? Like, but,
No, I forgot about that. Eddie Grant, eat your heart out.
Yeah.
Dom, you cover boxing in your other line of work. It was like your worlds colliding at Bramall Lane, wasn't it?
It was. It was a Venn diagram with my head in the middle of it, like doing a city game and a British former world champion boxman involved. But yeah, so I was in the press box that day and I just thought it was just some mad head who jumped on, which of course it was. But I had no idea it was Flanagan. And then it was like one of the fellas who works for our lot in the US who like just does boxing. He goes, hey, you're at this game today. Is it this Terry Flanagan? I was like, do you know what? Yeah, it is. yeah, I think Flanagan was... The funny thing about that, though, is, I mean, it's all relative with boxers, I guess, but Terry Flanagan was seen as like, he was quite a sort of tactically safe and, you know, maybe not the most watchable boxer. Like, you're pretty, you know, safety first, get the job done.
He was the pugilist, is what you're saying.
Your classic awkward southpaw.
Yeah.
But... So some people might say the most watchable thing he's ever done on Sky Sports was jump on Erling Haaland, which would be harsh. But yeah, that was a funny little Worlds Collide thing, definitely.
Yeah, let's take in some other quick social media things because Haaland tweeting WTF after the decision not to give an advantage against Spurs, but then the reaction of kind of like just retweeting the posts where he'd had the scream, where he'd had his face put in place of the scream on the painting.
Edvard Munches.
Yeah. Was good. And then did you see Foden passed his driving test? And then everyone went, "How's he got to this age and not passed his driving test yet already?"
29 when I passed mine. Fair play to him.
Because Foden's the type of person to have like gone round the States on a quad bike or a go kart.
Well, yeah, but the tweet by Jordan Sprague, defended just coming straight to the point to defend him, says, "Not everyone's got the money to do a couple of lessons every week and then pay for a test at the end of it, especially when he's got a young family."
What the fuck?
It's like, it's Phil Foden. So I enjoyed that. And then, I mean, he's not here to defend himself, KC, but Keirs, who did a lot of work for this alternative highlights, but sadly isn't well today, so isn't able to join us. He did his usual tweet of just making some sort of joke about the lineup, and then for the Aston Villa game where Grealish and Rodri were suspended, he tweeted, "Madness not to start Rodri tonight," and it definitely seems Grealish is out of favour with Pep, and it backfired because of the replies he got.
People just do not get any sort of humour at all, maybe on the internet. Does me head in, and especially like Kieran just constantly tweets that sort of shite. Do you know what I mean? You know, this cube never gives us nothing about every referee.
I think when this comes out, I'm gonna have to tweet, "Strange for Mooney not to have Kieran on the highlights of the year. He must really be out of favour."
Yeah,
it would. But I mean, only us three and Kieran would get it in the end, because you know what Twitter's like. Let's finish, Dom, with a couple of bits of bursting because Checker Trade put an ad up Old Trafford. Where it said leaky roof, tick, leaky defence, cross, there's only some things we can fix.
Yeah, good. City might be in their trophy in a couple of years, depending on the old Premier League case goes.
Yeah,
do they still... Is the Czech trade trophy still a thing? Trade trophy even.
Yeah, is that what took over the auto windshields?
Is that now the Papa John's?
That's the Papa John's. It was the LDV Vans as well for a bit, wasn't it?
Right. I'm just trying to work out if City get chucked into there, if we're going to have another Mansfield moment, that was all. Finally, KC, United fans still don't get the joke about Welcome to Manchester, because Jim Ratcliffe has had a Welcome to Manchester poster.
It's because they're just a humourless bunch of bastards, really, isn't it? Obviously, I'm not being fully serious, but God, some of them are such dry shites because they can't take that they're not winning anymore. Just, oh God, grow up.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
That was a look at the 2023 alternative highlights. Time now to have a look ahead to the game with Sheffield United. Adam, after the performance that City put in at Goodison, what do you want to see now at weekend? What is an absolute imperative for the game against Sheffield United?
Yeah, well, if you could choose any fixture, Sheffield United at home would be the one. So that's going to bite me on the arse first and foremost. However, I want to see a good, solid, clean sheet, controlled performance. I want to see some tweaks, just because we did look a bit We looked shot shot to pieces at certain parts last night before we found our mojo and were able to go again. So I'd probably want to see maybe Rico coming in just to freshen up the midfield a slight bit. I loved when Kovacic came on last night. I thought we looked a bit more controlled there as well. So maybe, if not Lewis, Kovacic comes in alongside Rodri. We need to be able to get Rodri a rest somehow, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
90 minutes on Saturday,
Yeah, exactly. Expect that. So, you know, if you could handpick an opponent to play at the weekend, given all the surrounding stories of our form going into it, what we need to win.
Bottom of the table at home is what you'd want.
Yeah, exactly, is what you choose. It's not always as easy as it is on paper, but we don't play on paper. So that's what I'll choose. So that's the type of performance I'd want. I think there needs to be some tweaks in personnel, but I don't know if we're going to be afforded that luxury because the context in which we're playing nowadays.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, Higgy, because obviously the turnaround is quite tight because it's a Wednesday to Saturday. Are there any changes that you'd like to see in terms of the lineup? Anybody who wasn't available for Everton who could come back in, or even anybody who was on the bench at Everton who you might think, actually, go and impose yourself on this game?
Well, I thought the biggest improvement of last night's performance was Kovacic for Nunes. Mm. You may have gathered I'm not
picked that up already.
100% convinced by.
I think you dropped a few hints in the first part of the show. Yeah,
given that it's going to be a bit more. Well, it's going to be more of the same, isn't it? Really, it's going to be a bit of a up and at 'em kind of blood and thunder type opposition. Sheffield and Everton, not too dissimilar in that respect in the midfield area. I wouldn't have thought so. Yeah, I'd like to see Kovacic in instead of Nunez. Does McAtee play?
He can't play, no.
Can't play, right, good.
No.
But yeah, other than that, I'm happy to leave it to old Beanad. No point trying to second guess him anyway, is there really?
No, that is true. One thing I found making podcasts throughout the entire Guardiola tenure is that this bit of the show is genuinely just guesswork. You can be as informed as you want, but still he'll play Gundogan wide left at Anfield for some reason, or you know something like that. The other one I did wonder about, Adam, was Diaz was ill for the midweek. With Stones out injured, should he be the one that comes back in, or are we happy with the way that the defence finished the game?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's a 24-hour thing and that he's back in just for a bit of composure or a bit of...
He hasn't had that lately, though, has he?
No, I know. But, this is the reputation thing in that my perception is if we've got one of Stones or Stones or Diaz in the middle, then I'm happy with whoever we flavour around that. That said, I was happy with Guardiola and Ake together last night in some quasi left-back, centre-back role interchanging and things like that. So I'm happy with either one of those being the left-back and centre-back option if Diaz isn't available. But just from my own pre-match perception of what a good defence looks like, it has Stones or Diaz in it. Having said that, I know Diaz hasn't been the Diaz we've needed recently either. And one clean sheet in eight or no clean sheet in eight Premier League games, we need to stop that somehow. And we need a bit of a solid defensive unit to do that, you'd imagine. Yeah. Or to stop giving the ball away in our own penalty box would help as well.
I thought Aki and Guardiola played really well.
Yeah.
I wasn't disappointed by Diaz being out. I thought that he does need a rest, a bit of recuperation and reflection. Think about
on the naughty step.
Yeah, a bit of a naughty step time for him. I think that could only be good. And another, on a positive note, since I seem to be just slagging players off quite a lot, I've been slagging Walker off quite a bit this season. I thought he was absolutely exemplary last night.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's an interesting one where I think a lot of people have been unhappy with Walker's performances this season, and I now wonder, Higgy, has it got to the point where he can play well, but still the calls for Rico Lewis to come in because of what he's done in stepping? I mean, the thing he does stepping into midfield that you're going to lose with John Stones not being there, it kind of leaves you in this position where you probably want him to come in and do it, but at the same time, after the performance at Goodison, you don't really want to drop Walker, do you?
I don't want to drop Walker anyway if he's playing to his full potential, because he's simply one of the best, if not the best, right back in the world. It's just a few like, don't know, so a few like attitude tweaks that seem to have come into play this season. Once he got given the captaincy, and we've kind of buckled the structure in terms of what we normally offer players, and we bent over backwards to keep him. And it might be, I might be being harsh and splitting hairs, but it just seems to have made him a little bit more the big I am than the kind of level of selfless humility that you need to perform at best in a Pep team. Mm. But he did last night. He did everything pretty much perfectly. There's still a lot of I don't know. You need an ego as a footballer. There's still a lot of, like, if anything did go wrong, he was always telling everybody near him that it was their fault. And there's a little bit late on in the game where, and this is like an example, although, albeit like a microcosm of the whole, in the kind of shift that I've seen in him, where he received the ball in the right-back position and there was a couple of what you would think more orthodox, sensible, usual, conventional passes forward to make that he could have just slotted it forward and then we build a move in the way that we normally do. And he just chose to hang on to it and run across the back four, like probing for a different part. It's like, you don't need to do that. Just do what you normally do. Don't start doing, I'm Kyle Walker, I'm not even going to play that obvious pass because I'm Kyle Walker, I'm going to start slaloming around looking for some kind of Hollywood pass. And I'm being, that is harsh because, like I say, it was pretty much perfect last night. I thought it was.
I was going to say that doesn't fit into the exemplary review you gave a few minutes ago.
No. Well, I said I was being harsh, but I just, it's the most kind of, it's the only example I can draw on to try to highlight the point that I'm trying to make in why I've been a little critical of him. Not that any of my opinions mean anything, but we are here to talk about football, and this is an opinion. So that's
deal
that's
with it, everyone. Yeah.
Unwrap that.
Yeah. Adam, you mentioned before about the potential to, of the need to rest Rodri, I guess, in certain situations. This is definitely one of them games that City could do with getting one and getting him off the pitch, isn't it? Because there's no way Guardiola starts without him, that's for sure.
No, yeah, that's got to be one of the aims. I think, like I said, given the context that we find ourselves 5 points behind with the potential to close leaders Arsenal and Liverpool down, you can't be making the type of changes that you might be able to if you were 6-7 points ahead of them. So I think it's a case of get some early goals, get him off the pitch, get him wrapped up for Cotton Wool, maybe miss the Huddersfield FA Cup game and see where we are in 2 weeks' time in the real kind of towards the business end of the end of the season.
Yeah, go and put your feet up, Rodri, before they fall.
Yeah, hopefully. Sort of
yeah. Right, let's get some predictions on the board. We're on £550 for the charity bet so far this season. One more chance in 2023 to add to it. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. Their final collection of the year is outside the Etihad on Saturday. They'll be under the bridge by the stadium over the road from Asda between 12:30 and 2:30. Go and see them with a donation if you can. It's time to put our money where our mouth is. So, Adam, what are you having for the Sheffield United game?
I'm backing us to get that elusive clean sheet and win 2-0.
2-0 is 6-1 and £60 if you're right. Higgy, over to you.
Manchester City 3, Sheffield United 1.
That is 11-1 and £110 if you're right. Interestingly, I've gone for 2-1. And that's 12-1 and £120. So City scoring fewer goals against Sheffield United is longer odds. Make of that what you will. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more information on gambling responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. To finish the show this week, I've got some quickfire questions for Higgy and Adam, all about 2023. Get your questions in on Twitter for future shows at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email us as well through the website. Just go to bluemoonpodcast.com, fill out the form there. So let's start with... because again, last show of the year, we've done the alternative highlights. We should probably do the actual highlights. Adam, favourite goal of 2023? What are you having?
I'm having Bernardo's headers against Bayern or Real Madrid. You can choose which one. Just how nonchalant they were, how statement making they were. That's up there for me. Yeah. Favourite goals.
Higgy, what about yourself?
Gundogan against Everton.
Oh, that's a shout. Because I was thinking...
You don't see goals like that.
No, you don't. I was thinking of four goals for this, both of the Bernardo headers against Bayern or Real. The Gundogan goal against Everton, where he flicked it around the corner, but also the volley against United because it was 13 seconds into the FA Cup final. How can you not love it?
yeah, that was up there, to be honest. But just in terms of just rare and unusual technique, showcasing the talent that he's got, it was just like, yeah, couldn't look past that. There's a lot to choose from, to be fair.
Yeah, and I've just remembered as well, Haaland scoring a, was it a bicycle kick style thing at Southampton?
Southampton, that was on my list as well. That was one of his limb flingers.
Yeah.
Back on bomb there.
Yeah. Higgy, favourite game of 2023? What would you pick?
You can't really look beyond Real Madrid, can you? I mean, that home game was probably the best performance, not only of a City team, that I've seen, but just of a football team. It was the most beautiful dismantling. It was a demolition. Yeah. Everyone was absolutely on fire. The game plan was perfect. Each individual player performance was 100. It was just amazing. Absolutely amazing and a privilege to watch.
Yeah, Adam, I get that because I would go as far to say that Real Madrid is probably my favourite game of all time in terms of a performance. I think it's the best individual team performance I've ever seen City put in. So it has to be the game of 2023, doesn't it? 100%,
no arguments. Yeah, I would like to nod to the Bayern Munich game just because we dismantled two European powerhouses at home and it was a real arrival moment. But yeah, that Real Madrid game was perfect.
Yeah. So how about your individual player of 2023, Adam? Where would you put your money on that one?
I'm going Rodri only because of his Champions League goal winning, but also how much we miss him when he's not there. I know the shouts for Gundogan, we evidently miss him, but we can literally see the stats with and without Rodri, whereas we don't have Gundogan to be able to say, oh, if he was playing, this would happen. Whereas we actually know what happens when Rodri doesn't play.
Yeah. Higgy, I've got Gundogan written down for me. What's yours?
I've gone for Rodri as well, just because Gundogan, obviously, an absolute linchpin, class act, and scores really important goals. But City last year was Rodri and then the team around him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. So, Higgy, your breakout player of 2023. And again, I fear when I wrote this, there was only really one answer to it.
Yes. And that answer is Rico Lewis.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
For obvious reasons, he broke out.
Yeah, he did. Literally did, didn't he? Yeah. Adam, have you managed to pick anybody else? It is Lewis, isn't it?
Yeah, no. Let's go for Micah Hamilton for next year's breakout player. But this time, we'll let Rico have it 100%.
Yeah. How about your most improved player of 2023, Adam? Where would you put your thoughts on that one?
I can't see past Nathan Ake. He's just been a really reliable, solid player to call upon. And you probably wouldn't have thought that was the job he was brought in to do or to be used as much as he is. So for me, it's Nathan Ake for most improved.
Yeah. Higgy, how about yourself? Any shouts for Akanji? Because you did say earlier in the show.
Well, I said Akanji earlier in the show, not really as... I mean, I did say that he'd improved on where I thought of him last season, but he seems to have gone round again. So it would be...
Maybe not.
I didn't have him written down, so no, it's not Akanji.
Okay.
I've got Ake or Grealish.
Okay. Ake was my gut instinct. I hadn't thought about Grealish. I want to chuck a thought out for John Stones.
Does he need to improve?
Improved as a player or just proved that he's more adaptable than we maybe thought?
I just thought with the solution that Guardiola came up with at the end of last season, using Stones in the way that he did, like it just elevated Stones' level beyond what we knew already. And it's like, even though it's most improved, he's improving from a high standard anyway. But the end of last season, he was top of the world, wasn't he? That was my thought. That was all.
I just think improved is the wrong word to describe the kind of transition of John Stones, because it's not really an improvement in his play as kind of
most transformed.
yeah
So you've gone for Ake or Grealish, Shiggy?
Yeah, do you want me to pick one?
Yeah, go on
Ake then.
Okay.
boom Ake boom,
there we go. There's only one correct answer to this last one. The best City podcast of 2023, what are you going for?
Well, I really miss Why Always Us, but in its absence, I'd have to go for the Blue Moon podcast.
Correct, correct. You can come back. Higgy, please tell us, Simon.
Well, it's a crowded field, isn't it? And there's only one I really listen to. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's the Blue Moon podcast.
Yeah. I might edit this bit out, you know, but, you know, I do like a little bit of self-indulgence at Christmas. So,
deserved. Yeah. Deserved.
Yeah, there we go. That brings us to a close for this week's show, though, and for 2023 on the Blue Moon podcast. Don't forget to go back and listen to the Christmas quiz. That is available now on the usual podcast feed. Came out on Christmas Day, and no spoilers from these two because Higgy and Adam both took part. It's 2 hours of festive fun for you. For these two, it was 2 hours of their lives that they're not getting back. Thank you for listening to the podcast this year. Thanks also to my guests for today's show, Chris Higginbottom.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Adam Carter.
Tidings.
We will have a special show on New Year's Day with a City Heaven, City Hell festive games edition. We'll hear from City and opposition fans about some good and bad fixtures over the Christmas period in years gone by, so stay tuned for that. All the best for 2024. We'll be back with our next regular podcast at the end of next week to review the game against Sheffield United. We'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.